tribulation, or whatever you want to call it, and prepared for the long haul. And you'll have heard Cheryl Cole singing Fight for This Love. How many have you heard that song recently? Okay. Now, apparently, there are such things called earworms that they talked about on the radio this week. Did you, anybody hear about? Do you know what an earworm is?
I do know.
Okay, I'll read you what it said on the internet. Easier to explain it this way. If you keep having a song that goes over and over in your head that you've heard, it's because of something called an earworm. And it goes on. No, it's not a parasite that crawls into your ear and lays musical eggs in your brain, but it is parasitic in the sense that you get a sort of like a sound egg that lodges in your head and causes a cognitive itch or a brain itch, and your brain fills in the sound, and so you get this repetitive thing. Well, I've had this as an ear itch for a while, and it's a very interesting concept. It's fighting for something that you believe in. And although she's been in the news recently, in terms of her marriage, she does say that, "I believe marriages are something you have to work at. Marriages are not rose petal paths that you skip down. They were never intended to be. It's not supposed to be easy. It's not supposed to be perfect." And she seems to understand that a good marriage involves hard work and commitment. Another way of saying it is to persevere. Can we have the next slide, please? So, question. Have you ever wanted to give up, quit, run away, give in to apathy? Right? We'll do a poll census this morning. Hands up if you've ever wanted to give up, quit, run away, or give in to apathy. Great, that's all of us. Good. Okay, next slide, please. I've recently become aware of this race called the Paris to Dakar Rally, and it's a rally where cars and motorbikes go from Paris all the way to Dakar in Senegal. Next slide, please, Rachel. Okay, this is what it says. Something like 6,200 miles covered off-road by motorbike riders and teams over 20 days, so nearly 3 weeks. It says the rally brings out the character of each person, who he or she really is, and how one responds to danger and nature. The rally is long, filled with exciting lands, both exotic and sometimes mundane, crossing over many different cultures. Expanding into one of the greatest races of this century, the Dakar Rally is truly a test of human endurance, where motorcycles, cars and trucks pass through deserts, sand dunes, rocks, villages and many different cultures. Okay, so 6,200 miles, or if you're a metric, 10,000 kilometres, in about 20 days, an incredible race unlike any other. In fact, they interviewed a guy the other evening, because it's actually on at the moment, one of the last races that took place, and he was a Dutchman, and he said every year, he's done it six times and succeeded three times, and he said he does it every year because that's his annual holiday. He loves his bike, and so he books it, and his annual holiday is doing the Dakar Rally. It goes on to say the Dakar Rally demands preparation on many levels, physically, technically, and morally. About 300 motorcycles and 200 cars and over 50 trucks start this endurance event, and less than 50% arrive at Dakar. The difficulty of the race is unparalleled. And if you're not doing anything Friday night late on Sky 2, you can see they're doing it in, as a series, but you just have to be aware that the F word appears quite a few times because men are men, and this is what the language they use when they're cycling in the desert. But it really is phenomenal. And you could be cycling. they can be cycling, and then suddenly, without any warning, there's this shoom, and this car overtakes them. And of course, because it's in a desert, there's lots of dust and stuff going into the air, and then they can't see where they're going, and they fall off their bikes, and oh dear. And they have these trucks following them with all their spare parts, just in case it gets really bad, you know, to get them up and running again. So, one of the things you have to have here, and it comes across as you watch the programme on it, is absolutely a persistent, persevering character, or else after the first day you would give up. Okay? What sorts of things? Why do we give up? What sorts of things cause us to kind of quit, give up, not be bothered? And throw me some suggestions. Doubt. Doubt, yeah.
Too hard.
It's too blooming hard.
Comfort.
Yeah? Comfort. Yeah?
It's too long.
Something's too long.
You run out of resources.
You run out of resources.
It's
yeah.
Worth it.
Is it worth it?
Come to your senses.
I'll try and program that through. Okay. Sometimes we might be doing something and you get misunderstood in what you're doing. Okay, fair enough. That's what you think. I quit. Mm-hmm. You know? You lose the vision. You lose the overall picture of what's going on. And you can sometimes feel isolated, not appreciated. Your enthusiasm for something dies. Okay? So, I mean, that's why in with Cheryl Cole, you know, you've got to work at that. This is not a talk on marriage, by the way, but you've got to work at it in order to keep the fire burning, in order to keep your relationship going. You know, you just can't let it slide. So it does involve a lot of commitment. Okay. Can we go on to the next slide, please? Okay. I'm just going to give you a couple of personal stories because we're running short of time this morning. But when I was 18, I was overseas because my parents were missionaries. And I was at the local high school, and around about that time we had a Black Power tussle going on, led by somebody called Stokely Carmichael and another guy called Michael X, who were very high up in the Black Power movement at the time. And Tobago was one of the islands that they were targeting. I didn't know that my geography master was actually their number one person in the island. Until he told me, he quite happily cut my head off and see it roll down the street, and it wouldn't make him flinch. I went to school for 6 months. I was the only white girl in school, and nobody spoke to me because they were at fear of being killed if they were seen talking to me. And I had to persevere going to school. I was trying to do my A-levels at the time, but just every day of not being spoken to, the only people who would speak to me were the white teachers who were on staff. And in fact, they actually left the island before I did. Mm. The British High Commission had a military vessel off the coast, and there was a plan in place to get me out of school, to meet my parents at a particular point where we would be helicoptered out off the island if things really got really bad. Mm. And at one point, having left, they did take all the kids from a couple of the schools and told them they were going to a car park for a rally, and then they held them all hostage there while they were trying to have their demands met. Mm-hmm. So I learned about persistence fairly early on because it was not easy going to school. My sister quit in January after a few weeks. I knew what it was to be put in a dustbin by my black contemporaries when I first arrived at the school, and then having to go on and stay and to keep going and to keep learning. Not easy. Marriage. I've told you my marriage story before, but God spoke to me when I was young and said that I would be married. And as the years went past, I thought, oh yeah. You know, he told me about, when was I? Early 20s. And I eventually got married when I was 40. That requires perseverance. It requires holding on to what God's told you, even when you can't see it working itself out. And a character I'm going to introduce you to a bit later on, Joseph, is a person who I identify quite a lot with, because at one point I tried to create my own way out of the situation, and I was actually engaged to somebody who was not named Peter. And and when it all blew up, I very clearly heard from God, heard him say, and now, who are you going to believe, me or what's just happened to you? And I had to choose to say, I believe you. So, next frame, please. And so what we're going to do this morning is have a quick run through something of the life of this character called Joseph. Joseph was the son of Jacob, grandson of Isaac, great-grandson of Abraham. And Rachel is going to get a clap at the end of this morning because she has got to switch between film clips and a PowerPoint presentation as we go through. So, what we're going to do is to find out a little bit about him, because he was actually Jacob's favourite son. If you remember, I think we did something in Cell recently, one of the characters we looked at, it was all about family troubles. and Jacob had married Leah before he was able to marry Rebecca, because in those days you had to marry the eldest daughter had to be married off first. And he had a number of children with her, had a number of children with her servant girl, and then Rachel couldn't have seemingly any children, so she gave her servant girl Zillah a few with her. And I thought the other day that's the first surrogacy that I came across in the Bible, really, somebody having babies for somebody else. And then, of course, she had her own, and Joseph was the first one she had. And so he was very, very favoured with his dad. His dad loved him, looked after him, and some people say actually really educated him, because he's quite a bright young man. And then gives him a very special coat, which apparently in those days could indicate that that was the person who was going to succeed and be the heir to the family, which actually then set him above the 10 stepbrothers that he had at the time. But God had spoken into Joseph's life, and we're going to see a clip to start with to help us understand this bit. Needless to say, Mr. Sandberg had to persevere producing these.
Their sheaves and brought them together and set them upright. And as soon as they were on end...
But don't stop now. What happened?
Then your sheaves all prostrated themselves. They bowed down before mine.
Yes, taking all they can. The boy's gone crazy because of father's promises to him. He already thinks he's our master.
I also had a dream. In mine there were 12 piles of manure. The smallest one walked and talked and told tales.
No, be serious. I've had enough of him. It's time we had this out. Tonight. After the day's work.
We'll see what Father thinks about this.
Okay. Can you remember what God said to Joseph? What happened? He had two dreams. And what was he told in those dreams, basically?
Brothers would bow down to him.
His brothers would one day bow down to him. He had a second dream, which was about sun, moon, and stars. Sun and the moon representing his parents. And again, all those bow down to him. Now, he's only about 17 at this age. As you can see from that clip, they portray very well the sort of antagonism that's beginning to develop between the brothers and Joseph. They can't stand him. They think he's an arrogant prig. They think he's a know-it-all. They think he's the favourite son, and they just do not find him the sort of person they want to spend time with, because he's constantly talking to them about what he's seen and the visions that he's had. And so one day his father sends him out from their tent to check up on boys, see how they're getting on, because you get the feeling that the brothers are a bit sort of footloose and fancy free. You know, they go off and get out the sheep and they don't really pay a lot of attention to what they're doing. You get this sort of feeling that they're quite a sort of strange group, really. And so Joseph goes out to see them. And while he is there, they come up with a plan. Mm-hmm. So, next clip, please, Rachel.
But they must fight.
You can't spill a brother's blood. Have you thought of the curse which will fall upon us if we do this? Stop it! Stop it now before it's too late!
Stop what?
Ignore him. Don't speak to boys who come to work in groom's clothing.
We come in search of more tales to tell.
Father wants a report, and he thinks I'm the one to do the job. He told me...
Forget what he told you!
You report on me,
and it'll be the last thing you do!
I'll do as Father instructed.
Simeon, stop it!
I'll do as Father tells me. And your warning smells of too much
blood. Hold him back!
When the time came to act for ourselves, you weren't there.
No, I wasn't. Perhaps I'm just not as big and brave as you are. Brother.
Letting you go? What if he tells our father?
He won't do anything. Not Reuben. He stands the most to gain from all this. With Joseph gone, who else will our father put in line to replace him? He'll be back. What?
I think there's a clip that just needs to go up at this point.
On the PowerPoint.
It's on the PowerPoint. So. I did say it was going to be a bit technical this morning, sorry about that. So Joseph ends up in a well, and eventually, instead of killing him, the brothers come up with a plan. And this plan is to sell him, because they notice the Midianite travelers going along, and so they sell him for 20 pieces of silver. And he gets taken all the way to Egypt. He's treated as a slave, and he's sold when he gets into Egypt, and is eventually bought by the captain of Pharaoh's guards, who's called Potiphar, when I say it. And they say it very differently. So it's an interesting concept. And he gets bought by Potiphar. Eventually, he works so well for Potiphar that he's promoted to be head of Potiphar's household. Potiphar's wife, on the other hand, is a bit of a wanderer and a philanderer. And so eventually, one day, she accuses Joseph of a sexual crime, which he has not committed. But being the wife of Potiphar, Potiphar is obliged almost to believe his wife in preference to his slave. And so the result of that is that Potiphar puts Joseph into prison. And this third clip that we've seen a bit of is what I wanted to have a look at, because it gives you a feel of what it was like for Joseph at this time.
I've thought long and hard of your reading of my messages.
The one you
have
said
you?
Before.
Yes, Master. And I am certain that Pharaoh has...
I'm sorry, I don't know why I'm giving that number. No,
hard of your reading of my messages. I've thought long and hard of your reading.
Anyway. Anything wrong, suddenly finds himself carted off, and as you see, he was walking down the passageway, and apparently those days sometimes they could actually have people saying by whipping you as you went along, and then he was chucked into that sort of prison, and you know, at that point, you know, he cries out, which is an interesting parallel, because we often parallel Joseph's life with the life of Jesus, and then my God, why have you abandoned me, why have you forsaken me? So he ends up in prison. He works his way through into the good books of the prison guards, and eventually he's almost in charge of the prison. So he's obviously got very good organisational skills that begin to come out, not only in his work with Potiphar's family, but also in the prison. And so he then finds one day two guys are brought in, if you know the story. One's a baker, one is the cupbearer to the king. They have dreams, and at that point, Joseph interprets their dreams for them, which seems to be a gift that God has given him. And the dreams come true. The cupbearer is restored to his job. The baker is hung. And as the cupbearer leaves, Joseph turns to him and says, by the way, you know, when you're out, please remember me. But Joseph was in that prison until he was 30 years of age. And it was only when one night the Pharaoh had a nightmare and had two dreams that were paralleled. One had to do with cows, and the other had to do with ears of wheat, that someone remembered. They remembered Joseph. And Joseph was brought out of prison and was asked to interpret Pharaoh's dreams, because Pharaoh's men couldn't do it. They said, we don't understand what's going on. Can you remember what those two dreams were? Seven skinny cows, and seven fat cows, and they still remained. Second dream?
Ears of wheat.
Seven fat ears, seven thin ears, blah, 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 thin. Result. Okay? And in the way they're presented in this video, Pharaoh goes away and thinks about it, and then has the same dream at night, and has another nightmare about it, wondering what is this all about. And his wife, and the woman who eventually he gives to Joseph as a wife, say, well, you know, maybe Joseph's talking some truth here, and that's where we meet Pharaoh. So, poor Jeff, please, thanks.
I've thought long and hard of your reading of my messages.
Have you?
Yes, Master. And?
I am certain that Pharaoh has been blessed by a warning from the Lord himself.
So, assume then that your reading is accurate. Is there nothing we can do to prevent this disaster?
Yes, Master, there is.
How?
Pharaoh must select a wise and honest man and set him above the land of Egypt. He must see that Pharaoh's overseers collect a fifth of all that is produced during the years of plenty, and store it for use during the years of famine. In that way, Egypt will not be destroyed by the drought.
Impossible, storing 7 years of grain. It's impossible. Is there no other way to avert disaster?
No, Master.
Nothing like this has ever been attempted. So, a fifth of all the harvest would be entrusted to Pharaoh.
Yes, Master. All Egypt would be required to pay you this tribute.
It would call for a man of exceptional talent. That excludes each of you. Potiphar, perhaps. The answer is obvious. There could be no better man for this job than this man himself. Can we find anyone endowed with the spirit of God as he is?
I think not.
Well said, wife. Now, you are on earth, God as man. You shall be my chancellor. And all my people shall respect your orders. Only this throne shall set me above you. I make you the governor of all of Egypt. I set you over my house, my people, my entire kingdom. Without your consent, no man shall lift up hand or foot in all of Egypt. Your name shall be Zaphnath-Paneah.
Have you got an extra gift?
And this fine woman shall be your wife.
Quick arranged marriage.
The Pharaoh is wrath. He sees into the depths of every being. God has seen and spoken.
This time, your God's blessing makes you master, even of me. I trust you treat me kindly.
His brothers have to come all the way from Canaan because the famine has affected the whole of that area, and he ends up feeding his family. From the age of around about 17 to the age of 30 is a long time to wait for God to fulfill something that he's told you. Joseph was allowed to go through an incredibly painful and frightening time. Can you imagine being a 17-year-old and being carted off to a strange land? People who spoke a strange language. And having to go through what your brothers had done to you, and the way you'd been treated. And yet, all the way through the story, you never find him saying anything nasty about them. You never find him complaining to God. There seems to be a quiet acceptance, really, of what's happening, which is quite strange. But there was something going on in here, because God had great things destined for Joseph. And as a young lad, He didn't know the full picture. He couldn't see the full picture. But God was teaching Joseph to rely on him and to listen to him. And there was nowhere harder to do that, really, than in a land where other gods were worshipped and you were one on your own. Nobody understood you or where you'd come from. So Joseph persevered in holding on to his faith in God. You heard from a couple of the statements made in that film, and if you read the story in the Bible, that it says that God was with Joseph, and people could see everything he touched prospered. Everything he did and got involved in grew and was a blessing. So why did Joseph go through all of this? Because God was doing something in him. He was teaching him to listen to him and to hold on to him. He was developing his character, because at the end we heard Pharaoh say, this is a man of integrity. So he was a man of integrity. He was quite humble in the way in which he dealt with things, different to how he was as a much more arrogant, I know it all, 17-year-old. God used the time to develop the gifts that he'd given him of interpreting dreams. He also seems to have developed his organisational and planning skills, because when Pharaoh said, what am I going to do? He had a solution straight away. He could say, well, you need to do this, you need to think about that. And so Pharaoh could see that here was a man who had listened to his God, and he was respected as a result of that. And when his brothers came to see him, instead of holding on to the anger and the outburst that he could have had for them and what they'd done to him, he suddenly saw the bigger picture. Because at the end of the story, he said, he turns to his brothers and he tells them who he is, and he says, you meant this for evil, but God meant it for good. Can we have the next slide, please, Richard? Okay, if you can just whisk through that into the next one, please. So it was all about God preparing Joseph for a great task. Because in the end, he saved a nation from starvation, and he also saved... Well, what would have happened if he'd not given grain to his brothers? What would have happened to the whole family of Jacob? They'd have died out. So what would have happened to Jesus? And the whole, you know, the whole plan. There was a bigger plan going on here than could have been seen at the beginning. And, so it was quite an important role that Joseph had. And actually the name that he's given by the Pharaoh, Asenath-Panea, actually means the saviour. That's what it means. And so for us, a couple of verses just to have a quick look at before we approach at lunchtime. Not only so, but we also rejoice in our suffering, because we know that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance produces character. And character, hope. If you take carbon and you pressurise carbon, what does it become?
Diamond.
Which do you get more money for? A diamond or a block of carbon? Have I got some scientists to screen with this? Okay, boys, we'll fight about that one later. Okay, so the diamond is often considered to be worth more than a piece of coal, a bit of carbon. Okay? And what God does with us when he allows us to walk through difficult times, he encourages us to hold on. And as we hold on to him and trust him, hold on to the words that he's given us, he works on our character, and our character changes, just as Joseph changed as things happened for him. And character develops that hope in God. You know, that we begin to really trust God. Next one, please, Richard. And 2 Peter goes on to say this: for this very reason, make every effort to add to your faith goodness, and to goodness knowledge, and to knowledge self-control, and to self-control perseverance, and to perseverance godliness. Okay, because it's something that we have got to make. We have to make the effort to persevere. You know, we can't sit there and go, I'm going to allow God to make me persevere. It's something we have got to work at, you know. I don't know about you, but sometimes I wake up in the morning and all, I'm in a situation, I go, I quit, I give up. And then immediately there's another voice that comes out of my mouth that says, I will not give up. And it's because of that, and hearing that song and various other things, and even the word for today, something that I read, is all about perseverance and endurance. You know, when you become a Christian, when you get involved in God's kingdom, you just don't quit. You can't. You've got to hold on, believe what God is saying, and keep fighting and keep pushing onwards. Joseph didn't quit. Jesus didn't quit on the cross either, because he couldn't call 10,000 angels and said, I've had it, no more. Get me out of here, Scotty. Yeah? He could have done that quite easily. No, not quite God, Scotty, if you know what I mean. Beam me up, yes, get me out of here. But you know, God is at work in these situations. I came across these quotes, if we can have the next slide up, which are quite interesting. When the world says, give up, hope whispers, try it one more time. It's a Japanese proverb that says, fall 7 times, but stand up 8. Mm-hmm. You know, keep going. Perseverance is the hard work you do after you get tired of doing the hard work you've already done. And I thought if Cheryl Cole had been here this morning, she might have said, if your faith is worth having, then persevere. There will be tough times. It will require hard work and commitment. Final slide, please. God says, you need to persevere so that when you've done the will of God, you will receive what he's promised. There may be things that we're going through at the moment that we just don't understand. We don't see the big picture of it at this time. But my encouragement to us all this morning is to hold on to God, hold on to the promises that he's given to us, hold on to the dreams that he's given, and keep at it, because we never know what's around the corner. And if this morning you find that you're in a battle trying to hold on to things, then I'm sure there are a couple of us here who would be more than happy to pray with you. Because that's the great thing about being part of God's family, is that we can encourage each other and support each other as we push on towards the prize of the high calling in Jesus. Thank you.
Thank you.